In fact, I won't be mentioning shape dynamics until the last slide. Anyway, so what I will be talking about is Dirac observables in constrained systems and how the rules of the game change when chaos enters the picture. And in fact, it enters in such a substantial way, or the rules of the game are changed to such an extent, substantial way, that you should be aware of it if you're interested in the topic of Dirac observables in general, or also in the topic of constraint quantizations. And remarkably, this has been ignored for, or pretty much ignored in the literature, this issue. So this topic will be based on the first paper here that I wrote with Milka Kubalova and Artur Zubanjan a couple of years back. And then the main part of this talk will actually be based on a recent project that I did with master student Mike, and then also together with Bianca and Tim Kozlowski. Okay, so this will be very much about observables and tiny bit about general relativity. So generativity is, of course, a gauge theory. It's a diffeomorphism invariant theory. And what we would like to have is diffeomorphism invariant quantities as physical observables. Now, these quantities are quite complicated to obtain. They are highly non-local. They exist results on this. Then these diffeomorphism invariant quantities, they should be in general coordinate invariant. Then a question arises how we should actually be doing dynamics if we don't have any coordinate dependence. This is a general problem that arises, but then in the canonical formulation, what you would want to do is that the diffeomorphism invariant quantities, they should be invariant under the flows of the constraints of the theory. So this gives rise to the notion of Dirac observables as basically the constants of the motion of the constraints of the theory. So, and then how could we do actually dynamics? So the usual way out, or that the way that's usually suggested, is to adopt the concept, the idea or the concept of relational dynamics, and to adopt the idea of evolving constants of motion or relational Dirac observables. This has been advocated actually many years back already by DeWitt, but it has been picked up a lot by Rovelli in the 90s, and also notably by Bianca a couple of years back. And these observables, or relational observables, or Dirac observables in general, are in fact quite important for the quantum theory, either way, if you do it canonically or not. And as I mentioned, they're notoriously difficult to construct, which might have been seen as a technical problem for many years, but in fact here we'll argue also that it might not just be a technical problem, but that it might be in principle impossible to construct them, because in general they won't exist in chaotic systems.
Can I just ask a question here, just to put it in the same page with people here are used to something else? So when you talk about physical observables here, for instance, the proper time of an observer within a space-time is not considered a physical observable. Physical observables here are functionals of the metric and momenta, or?
Yes, I mean, any diffeomorphism invariant quantity. Yeah. But I guess you could, in principle, but proper time, you could, in principle, have a... The thing is that the proper time, you can compute it along a world line as long as the initial and final event is clear by, intersection with some other world line, then the proper time along that should be diffeomorphism invariant. Yeah.
I will ask about the Dirac observables. But observables should connect with the constraints.
Yes.
Is that with every constraint independently, or?
Only first class constraints.
But every first constraint, because I've been reading up on something called the gauge generator, which is a certain linear combination of first class constraints,
yes,
primary and secondary. And one requires that gauge invariant observables are invariant under the gauge generator. But that's a particular combination of these first class constraints. It doesn't have to be invariant under each and every.
No, each and every first class constraint is a gauge generator, so it should be invariant under each flow of them. So that means gauge invariant quantities are quantities that are constant on gauge orbits. And the gauge orbit could be multidimensional.
Each and every first class constraint is a gauge generator.
No, but he means something else, a gauge generator. This is like
This goes back to the
It was like we want to actually have the Lagrangian symmetries matching it. Take linear combinations of these.
But every possible combination.
No.
Well, every first class. So, I mean, you can run that argument in, because first class constraints, I mean, they're multiplied by arbitrary functions of time, and that gives you arbitrariness in the time evolution, and that is interpreted as a gauge symmetry. So hence, every first class constraint is taken to be a gauge symmetry generator.
Okay. Maybe
sure. Okay, so and then so just to get everybody on the same page, so how do we think about relation dynamics? So here's the simplest way of in which you could consider it. So we'll just consider here a free particle with fixed energy in the plane. So the reason I consider the simple example is because later on I will do a slight twist to this model, which will actually screw up its dynamics. But anyway, let's just keep on looking at this example here. So the constraint is given by this. This is clearly an integrable system. You have independent Dirac observables. Both the momenta are Dirac observables that commute with the constraint. And of course, it's a rotation invariant system. So also the z direction of the angular momentum is, in fact, a constant of motion, if you want. It's a Dirac observable. And you can do relational dynamics here by just solving the equations of motion with respect to that constraint. So for instance, I mean, the p's are, of course, constants, but x1 and x2 will have some non-trivial evolution. And then you can ask, for instance, what is the value of x2 when x1 takes a certain value tau, let's say. You can solve it easily, and this is what you would get, and that it, you can check is a relational observable. It commutes with a constraint. In fact, you can also write it in terms of these Dirac observables here. So these, when you have such a relation observable x2 of tau and p2, they're canonically conjugate. They satisfy Poisson algebra. They parametrize the reduced phase space. And in fact, here you have a nice reduced phase space. There's nothing really interesting happening here. And in fact, usually people, also especially in quantum cosmology, like to think of relational dynamics in such a simplified way. So here in this talk, I will try to convince you that this is a way that is in general not useful to think about relational dynamics. So, so and indeed that has to do with chaos. So there's a lot of evidence that in fact general relativity is, or that generic generativistic spacetime is in fact a chaotic system. So what is the evidence? I mean, there are multiple. One can even start from the Newtonian picture. So as you might well know, actually it should be n larger or equal to 3, not smaller than equal to 3. The n-body problem in Newtonian gravity is a chaotic system. So given that general relativity is much more complicated than Newtonian gravity, it's hardly imaginable that that general relativity resolves that issue. Then, in fact, it turns out that even some of the simplest cosmological models that you can imagine are also chaotic. So one example is the closed Friedmann universe with a minimally coupled massive scalar field, which has been shown to be chaotic. Then there exists, of course, the homogeneous models, mixed mass universes, or Bianchi 9, which has been shown to be chaotic. Then there exists also the so-called BKL conjecture, which posits that a generic cosmological solution to the Einstein equations, in fact, features chaotic oscillations on approach to the initial singularity. And well, in any case, in general, a generic dynamical system, in fact, is chaotic. So, so what does that actually mean? So let me, on the next page, maybe remind you what consequences of chaos are in the context of unconstrained systems. So first of all, an integrable unconstrained system is a system. So what I should say is from now on, I'm only going to talk about finite dimensional systems, so not about field theory, but mechanical models or cosmological models. So an integrable system is one where you're in a two n-dimensional phase space. You have actually n smooth constants of motion. So if they are actually in involution, they satisfy this relation here, then they're surface forming. And in fact, trajectories have to lie on surfaces which turn out to be of this topology. And so it means the trajectories, they lie on n-dimensional submanifolds in your phase space. Now, the other extreme is when you have a non-integrable system, so it's again in the unconstrained case, This is when you have, in fact, no global smooth constants of motion other than the Hamiltonian itself. So, and what does that mean? So, in this case, so only the energy will be fixed. So, I'm talking about autonomous systems here. So, what that means is that, in fact, the dynamics, or there will exist trajectories in your dynamics that will not only lie on an n-dimensional submanifold of your phase space, but in fact, that will fill a volume of codimension one of your phase space. So, and there exist various characterizations of non-integrable systems. They can be ergodic, they don't have to be ergodic. They can be chaotic, they don't have to be. But all these characterizations for us are actually not that important. What really matters for us is the absence of global smooth constants of motion other than the Hamiltonian. So, and in fact, non-integrability is a generic property of typical dynamical system. And there exist also concrete theorems for the absence of such constants of motion that you can check in the literature. And in fact, now we're going to come back to general relativity. Yeah.
Could one perhaps be satisfied with ones that emerge asymptotically? I mean, I'm thinking about this.
Sorry, I didn't.
What are the things that emerge asymptotically? I mean, I'm just thinking about the n-body problem.
Yeah.
By my famous Janus point, it's chaotic there like sorta B. But as you go out, bound systems form and they have conserved properties. So maybe this is a statement that actually quantum gravity will make sense in some sort of
aspect. So, yeah, that's why I'm emphasizing here global. So it is true that you can have approximate constants of motion that are true for part of trajectories, but not for the entire trajectory. And what is also important is that they're smooth. So I'm emphasizing smooth here. In fact, you can have constants of motion all the time, but in general, they will in fact be discontinuous functions. But locally, they might be well-behaved. But this is really a statement about global and smooth constants of motion.
And of course, in this case, there is no local symmetry, no local gauge symmetry, no local any.
Here, and in this case, well, yeah, I mean, here, this is unconstrained systems, yes. So, but then, in fact, now we can combine what we have talked about so far about constrained systems and the evidence that general relativity is a chaotic system, this full general relativity. So then you might be concerned that if you have actually a constrained system, generically, it should be non-integrable as well, or even chaotic, that then you have no global smooth Dirac observables other than the constraints themselves. So, and that certainly has a lot of repercussions. So first of all, that might mean that smooth Dirac observables probably do not exist in the first place for a generic GR solution. That physical degrees of freedom do not satisfy any nice, at least Poisson algebraic structures. And this raises questions also, or at least challenges for a quantum theory of gravity, at least when we want to think of the physical degrees of freedom, how we represent them in the quantum theory. And for instance, reduced quantization in such a case would be impossible or outright impossible. But even if we could do something like Dirac quantization or path integral quantization or something, then you still have the challenge that you should explain how the observables that you get in such a quantum theory, how they reconnect back to a classical theory that has no algebraic structures in the space of observables, at least not globally. And in fact, so this is what Lee calls Newman's worry. And according to Lee, Newman doesn't actually remember that it was his worry, but there's one paper where Lee discusses this issue very briefly, 10 years or 14 years ago. And in fact, this issue has been otherwise pretty much totally ignored in the literature. And despite its possibly having quite some severe repercussions. So what I should also say is that one can also, in addition, argue that that in chaotic systems, that they do not exist actually good clocks, good relational clocks that parametrize the orbits. So, and one thing that comes up here is that one might ask oneself whether we are actually fooled in our understanding of general relativity or of observables by the explicit solutions that we actually have. They're integrable, of course, otherwise we wouldn't have them as solutions. But that this really is a pick, or I mean, that the generic case is actually something non-integrable, that in which case you get into trouble. So one thing that one should emphasize is that there's a difference, of course, between the unconstrained and the constrained case. In the unconstrained case, you don't actually need to solve the dynamics in order to access the physical degrees of freedom, so that you don't have global smooth constants of motion isn't really, it's not really problematic. I mean, you can just live with that. In the constrained case, it's a bit different because you actually need to solve the dynamics in order to access the physical degrees of freedom if you want to have Dirac observables.
About fixing gauge?
Yes. Yeah, the problem is that in such a chaotic system, fixing gauge might be totally impossible also, because trajectories just go all over the place, and then it's impossible to actually have a global...
The Dirac brackets are invertible.
Sorry?
So there's a criteria for fixing gauge such that the Dirac bracket of the constraint and the gauge fixing condition matrix is invertible.
What you will have in such a case is the Griebov problem, and very severely.
Yeah,
so and then
might be.
No, but I mean the thing is that but in a general case, so I mean in a region where there's, for instance, chaotic scattering or something, then trajectories go all over the place, and they might fill certain regions densely. Then then it's not clear what you actually mean by gauge fixing, because that gauge is even in a small region maybe densely crossed by the same trajectory. Then yeah.
In the n-body problem, which is the energy is zero, and over zero, you have what you then call syngenous surface.
Mm-hmm.
The moment the rotational momentum is zero only once on one surface, and that surface turns out to be in space symplectomorphic to shape space, and it is a good gauge fixing of the Newtonian constraint of the system. Per orbit, you only reach minimal size once.
Mm-hmm.
If you consider similar orbits as identical, you're uniquely led to the projectivized cotangent bundle to shape space. That has no Griebov problem.
Okay.
There's another example like that I could tell you.
If you put it in a box, then yes.
Mm-hmm.
You cross it. Infinite
amount of times,
but if there's no box,
no. I think these are strong arguments which prove the point. I mean, the problem that Ted Newman brought up was the idea that if we have constant motion, which are constant on chaotic trajectories, and if the chaotic trajectory comes arbitrarily close to every point in the phase space, then they won't be. Then those functions won't be differentiable. There won't be any notion of the derivative.
Okay.
And therefore, the Poisson brackets, the Dirac brackets amongst them won't be defined.
So actually, we will come to this here explicitly.
Flavio, you're arguing, you should be arguing the other way. That's the generic case. If you have a special case which defeats this worry, you can turn it into an argument for your case. The generic case certainly has this worry.
Well, yeah, and I mean, relating to that dense crossing, that is then a serious problem also for gauge fixing, as I said before.
There's one particular, a couple of pressureless dust to GR.
Yeah.
If you can fix a dust time gauge, there's no such problem.
Yeah, but then it might be that the system is outright non-chaotic and integrable.
Well, it's some system, but it's full GR, actually.
Yeah, but
this problem does not.
So, I mean, we obviously have solutions to general relativity that are integrable.
This is general. This is completely
integral. Yeah, but coupled with dust, and
yes.
I think that system is actually integrable. And I think, sorry, yeah, but I think that system is integrable because you actually have the momentum of the dust, isn't it linear in it?
Yeah.
So and then
yeah, that's how it works out.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what that turns the system integrable. And then you don't have this problem.
It's not clear it's still integral because it's now we've got past the constraints. It still doesn't mean that it's integral.
No. Once you get past the constraints, then it might not be integral
right.
there. But in order to actually solve the dynamics, or that you don't actually have chaos really in the full constraint system, because you have you can always deparametrize in that dust field because the momentum is linear, and if you take that as a clock, it would be kind of a perfect clock. And then, so in that sense, that system I would not regard as a non-integrable system. So and then but that's not a generic case. So that's actually a very special case.
We'll discuss it.
Yeah.
Can I just come back to your question about things getting very close to each other? So if I have one solution, which will, I mean, this will come out of my talk tomorrow, we can specify certain things which determine the solution. I mean, these are perennials in Kobayashi's terms. But I what you're saying is that I can have two solutions where the perennials would be hugely different if I get, I mean, I'd put the two different micro solutions. They come incredibly close to each other in the...
And the value of that perennial space, might be very
but
different.
The values of the, yes. Of the perennials are hugely different.
So, and
is that
actually,
the point you're making?
So maybe I should move on, because in fact, here, this is general blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I will give you now a concrete model where exactly this happens.
Okay, great.
So, So what we're going to do now is, we're just going to put a twist on this free particle in the plane. And how we do this is we're actually going to compactify the dynamics. So we put it basically, the configuration manifold is now a torus. So we identify xi plus 1 with xi. And in fact, we don't really have to do this, but we will also add masses here, two different masses. So you can, in fact, view this as a system of two particles on a circle, if you want. And they're non-interacting. So now the solutions to the equations of motion, they don't look very complicated, but they're a bit different now. So just note that the t here is the gauge parameter along the orbit of the Hamiltonian constraint, so it's not a proper time. So the solutions look like this. So what the n1 and n2 are here are what you can call winding numbers. So basically, if you think of this here as being the configuration manifold, the torus, the dynamics might start, you know, here, and then it moves. And then in order to stay on the, when it hits the boundary, basically, in order to stay on the between 0 and 1, you have to subtract 1 for the first time. So this is basically here the winding numbers. They count how many times you, a solution goes around the torus. And so it's basically this n1 here of this blah, blah, blah is just a floor function. So what is important is now that, so what we're actually interested in is, so we have here now x1 and x2 as a function of this gauge parameter. And what is important is the ratio of the masses and the momenta. So if this ratio, in fact, is rational, it turns out that the torus that you get is a resonant torus, and you get periodic orbits. So they close in on itself after a couple of windings. But what is if this ratio is actually not in the rational numbers, then it turns out you get actually so-called non-resonant torus, and you get ergodic orbits. So a generic trajectory will just wind around the torus infinitely many times without actually ever crossing itself again. And in fact, such an ergodic orbit will fill this such a torus densely. So, and that is what will screw up the Dirac observables in this case. So what I should say, first of all, is obviously, so the constraint is just this here. So as before, in fact, the momenta are just Dirac observables. So it's not a completely screwed up system. So we do have some Dirac observables, but it turns out we don't have sufficiently many of them. So now what we would like to have is, if we want to parametrize the dynamics by Dirac observables, or if we want to parametrize the solutions by Dirac observables, then these PI, what they parametrize is which torus you're on, but they don't distinguish which trajectory on a given torus you're on. So what we want to have is a Dirac observable that has a non-trivial dependence also on the configuration degrees of freedom. So, and then the question is, does there exist such a smooth Dirac observable that actually depends on the configuration variables? And it turns out the answer is no. Any such function that has to be constant on the trajectories on the torus and has a non-trivial dependence on the configuration variables has to be discontinuous in the configuration variables. And the reason is as follows, that it has to do with the ergodic orbits. If you have a non-resonant torus, so then the trajectories on a non-resonant torus, they fill the torus densely. So it means every neighborhood on that torus is crossed by every single one of those trajectories that you have on that torus. And that means if you now want to have a function that is actually constant along each of the trajectories, that means that in any neighborhood, this function has to take every of its values that it takes on that given torus. And that is impossible for a continuous function. So it means whatever that function is, it is not continuous, and hence it is not differentiable. So it's not really a Dirac observable. Doesn't mean there doesn't exist anything that's constant along the orbits, but it's a very discontinuous object. So it's really here the ergodicity in the configuration space that destroys the full integrability of the system. It's still a semi-integrable system because we do have a couple of Dirac observables here.
We still have global observables, like we still have delta, which are just constants.
Well, the PI. But the point is now that, yes, but they're not sufficient to parameterize the space of solutions. So you don't have a reduced phase space because, I mean, you have P1 and P2, but they're not independent. So basically, you just have P1. And so you don't have sufficient algebra of observables. So if you had a reduced phase space, then the Poisson algebra on the reduced phase space would promote to first-class functions, or algebra of first-class functions on the constraint surface, but we don't have that. So that means we actually can already see that we don't have a reduced phase space. But it's actually even worse. You can show that the space of solutions, which normally is the reduced phase space, is in fact a non-Hausdorff set, and it's not even a manifold. So you can show you cannot map it locally into open neighborhoods of an Rn. So in this simple model here, gives you then a failure of the Marston-Weinstein type symplectic reduction. And in fact, this is a very simple model, and this model is not even chaotic. I mean, as I said, you actually have some Dirac observables. And you can even compute in this model so-called topological entropy that measures basically information growth in dynamical systems. Turns out to be zero, which is taken to be absence of chaos. So already in such a simple model and quite harmless model, you have an issue. So, but nevertheless, classically, it's not really conceptually such a big problem, because you can simply take it as a generalization of Dirac observables, because what we are ultimately interested in is gauge invariant quantities. And gauge invariant quantities means just we have something that's constant along the orbits, and we can still have that, just that we have to accept that these objects will be discontinuous. But at least conceptually, you could say that in such a sense, chaos or whatever, it can still be observed, though it has a physical meaning. And also, relation dynamics can still have a meaning in this case. It might just be that it's only implicitly defined. So as before, so we had, for instance, here in this example here, relational dynamics. We just solved the equations of motion for x1 and x2 and then insert them into each other. You can do something similar here. The only thing is that then this object here is an implicit relation. So you can, in fact, parameterize the winding numbers by so tau is the value that x1 as a clock can take, and the phase space function here x1 x2 and x2 is the solution, or is x2 sorry that's the value that x2 takes when tau reads such and such. So you basically would have to solve this equation here for x2 of tau. That's globally impossible to do because of these winding numbers here. However, what one can say is that we again have to distinguish here the resonant torus case from the non-resonant torus case. So in the resonant torus, you have periodic orbits. And then, for instance, if you look at x1 equals 0, then you have only finitely many crossings of a trajectory for a given x1 equals 0. So you would actually have a finite number of solutions here. But when you have a non-resonant torus, then such a circle of fixed x1 will be crossed densely many times by such a solution. So it's in fact so you cannot actually explicitly solve it. So, but still implicitly it makes sense. There's not really a problem here. And in fact, if you really want to, you can even locally on branches of the solution, you can even solve this equation. So for a fixed n1 and n2. So if you just start out on your torus, and before you actually cross once around, then I mean, you would just have this zero and this zero, and you would actually have a linear relation here. But that wouldn't be a globally well-defined observable, but it would be locally well-defined. And so locally, that's not really a problem. It's more a global problem. So now we can ask about quantization of such a system.
Question.
Yeah. Does it do
that
what?
Make your analysis.
Yeah. So I mean, the problem is still you don't get around this here, this general argument here. So I mean, the angle variables, they will, so you would replace the axis. I mean, the axes are basically angle variables. It would be the same issue. So now we can ask about quantization. So we could actually, in this simple toy model, test three ways of quantizing it. First, this reduced quantization will directly fail. Second, we can try a standard direct quantization, such a simple example. And then thirdly, we can try what I shall call Bianca quantization, not because we're quantizing Bianca, but that's a way that Bianca has suggested to resolve this issue here by, in fact, introducing discrete topology. And the reason I put here a green check mark is because there's evidence that actually this Bianca quantization gets around some of these, or possibly all of these problems. So reduced quantization, there's not much to say about it because we don't have a reduced phase space, so it's outright impossible. But remarkably, standard Dirac quantization you can actually do. So this is a simple example where reduced quantization and standard Dirac quantization are inequivalent. So what you can do is, so the configuration space is just a torus, so we can take a standard kinematical Hilbert space of square integrable functions on the torus. We have the momenta acting as usual. We can have a basis on this Hilbert space by these periodic functions. They must be periodic because of the periodicity conditions here. And the k1, k2, they must be must be integers. So here the constraint then just reads like this. And the solutions to the constraint, they will be given by k1 and k2 here such that they solve this eigenvalue equation that comes from the constraint here. And in fact, this is a very difficult Diophantine problem. So because these k1, k2 are actually integers, so this e has to have very particular values for this to actually have some solutions at all. So for a generic e, there won't be any solution. Okay, that's not a big problem because also for a generic e in a harmonic oscillator, there's also not a solution. But here the situation is still a bit different. In fact, generically, the numbers of solutions that you get will be very, very small if you get any solutions at all. So, and this is in particular when this mass ratio is not in the rational numbers. Then it turns out you can show that the dimension of the physical Hilbert space, that is, of linearly independent solutions, cannot be larger than 4. So you have at most a 4-dimensional physical Hilbert space. So it's like a 2-qubit Hilbert space to describe the dynamics of such a mechanical system. So in a qubit Hilbert space, the observables, they can be represented or understood as propositions, yes and no questions, and they're actually not very interesting observables for such a system. You can ask about the relations between K1 and K2, but you cannot really ask any continuous questions. So here, one effect that we see is we have few observables. So we only had, remember, the momentum as an independent Dirac observable, but we didn't have any smooth other Dirac observables. So basically, the picture we get here is that we have few Dirac observables, and accordingly, we have very few states that can distinguish these Dirac observables. So we get a small physical Hilbert space. So now, without going to much further detail here, so I just want to argue that this quantum theory is actually sick, and in the following sense that you don't really get any good semi-classics out of it. So if we now consider a solution space that is 4-dimensional, you can nevertheless actually build out of these solutions here, you can build something that looks like a coherent state. So this here is the section at x equals 0 here. But the problem is, it turns out that this direction here, I mean, it looks like a periodic orbit, but the problem is that the direction of this orbit, in fact, does not agree with a classical orbit. So it fools you as if this is a classical orbit, but it's actually not. And furthermore, what you also see here, in fact, the width by separation is 1. That's not what you would expect of a semi-classical state. And you can also show that the spread of the momentum, that's your only Dirac observable that you have here, is scales with the energy. That's also nothing that you would want to have in a semi-classical state. So, and this is really the highest of feelings you get for a system with irrational mass ratios. So in this case, you don't get anything better than this. This is basically a quantum theory. And it doesn't really connect to your classical system. So in that sense, I would call it sick. The situation is a bit different when you have, in fact, a mass ratio of 1. Then you have exceptionally some solutions that can be much larger. One example is you can actually have one where the Hilbert space is 12-dimensional. Then you can do something similar. So you can have an initial localization that looks a bit like this. And then you can evolve it using the constraint, basically. And what you get is a state that looks like this. So you still have a bit of directions here that's related to the fact that we have the momentum as a Dirac observable that gives you something like the direction, but it's still not really a nice semi-classical orbit. And you generically can argue that also these states will always decohere, which is maybe not what you really want for a semi-classical state. So generically, such quantum theories, they actually have a serious problem. So, but now we can try to see how we can get around this. So, and this is what Bianca suggested. So, what we have seen is that if you want to have additional observables as gauge invariant quantities, these objects are highly discontinuous. So you might want to try to actually change your topology in which you're quantizing the system and instead of a smooth topology, consider a discrete topology on the torus, which is such that every point on the torus actually is an open set. And then you consider states. So you have a kinematical Hilbert space that is now given it's an inseparable Hilbert space. The states are just given by Kronecker deltas on points on the torus. These basis functions, they are normalizable with respect to some discrete measure. And you can now write any state on this Hilbert space as being some finite combination of these basis states. And of course, these states are highly discontinuous states. But so you can wonder whether you might be able to actually represent discontinuous functions on such a Hilbert space if you actually solve the constraints. So because it's so discontinuous, we don't really, the momenta cannot be quantized as derivative operators, but you can quantize them as translation operators. So we can still think of, so R1 would be the translation in X1. So you have to specify by how much. So mu is like the translation parameter. You can do the same for X2. What I should say is this type of quantization here, this discrete topology quantization is in fact what people use also in loop quantum cosmology. So people in loop quantum cosmology might be happy about this. So, yeah. So in the constraint, we have something like these squared momenta. In fact, here in this case, I would just consider the masses to be just one. You can also do it for mass not equal to one, but we'll just make the equations a bit bigger. But you can replace this by something that looks like this. This is an object that is basically like a Laplace operator. So you have kind of discrete derivatives, difference equations. And then the constraint, in fact, translates into something like this, where you take this Laplacian, if you want, for both directions, and you fix the energy. So, and then you can consider, so what we want to know is, of course, now if we want to solve this constraint, we want to know how big is the solution space. And if you want to consider that, we have to know what the spectrum of these S's is or what the spectrum of these R's is. And that, in fact, turns out to depend on the value of the translation parameter mu. So I would just consider now a one-dimensional example. It holds for the two-dimensional case as well. So you can now consider eigenstates and eigenvalues of such a translation operator. And it depends on whether mu is rational or an irrational number. If it is a rational number, what happens, you can check that such an object here is an eigenstate of the system. So what do you actually do? So these are the basis states here. And if you act with this R on it, then it will just shift these basis states always by a step mu. So what you do is you basically take your all the basis states on a circle until you close in on yourself. You multiply it by a phase here. And the phase is such that if you operate with an R on it, what it does is basically it takes the states and rotates it a tiny bit relative to that phase. And that gives you an overall phase, which is then the eigenvalue. And these eigenvalues are given by this here. So they are discrete eigenvalues. If it is an irrational number, then it turns out to be a continuous spectrum. So these, for similar reason to here, these turn out to be the eigenstates of the translation operator. It just turns out that the spectrum then is really in U1. It's a continuous spectrum. So and this is what is called the Bohr compactification. So here what happens basically, so in the usual quantization, we have the momentum eigenvalues k, some discrete set, know, in the integers, and this gets mapped onto a circle. And yeah, depending on your mu, you either get just a finite number of points here on the circle, or if you have a irrational number, then it will fill it densely. It might be that, for instance, the number 100 that is very far away from the from zero might be very close to zero, and so on. So it might be that actually physically case that, that correspond that are very far away for standard quantization are actually kind of physically equivalent in the Bohr compactification. So now what I just want to say is now, so the spectrum of the constraint using these results here, you can show that if it is a rational the step, then turns out the spectrum is given by this object here. So you have to find K1 and K2 in the integers, or sorry, in the given by these natural numbers, such that they solve this equation or set it to zero. This is an even more complicated Diophantine problem than the one we had before. But again, in this case, you might or you will only get a discrete number of solutions. But the situation is totally different if you have actually an irrational step distance. In that case, you can show from these eigenvalues here that you actually get this spectrum of a constraint, and you will solve it to zero if you can set this stuff here to zero. And in fact, that means you actually have a continuous set of solutions. So you can fix row one, and then you can find many solutions for row two. So, and that means we can actually get an infinite dimensional Hilbert space in this case, infinite dimensional physical Hilbert space, in contrast to the standard Dirac quantization that we had before. So it's a much more interesting Hilbert space. There's many details that I'm glossing over here because you have also have to take care of super selection sectors and so on. But the main point is that you still actually, you get a very, very large Hilbert space. And there's also strong evidence that in fact you can also build something like nicer, maybe semi-classical states, although that remains to be done a bit more rigorously. And there's also hope that on such a big Hilbert space, I mean, you will have a lot of observables on such a big Hilbert space. Many of them will be discontinuous. And there's good hope that you could actually represent those discontinuous Dirac observables on such a Hilbert space. So, but I think time is running out, so I should move on. In fact, I just wanted to, I'm probably not going to talk about this. So before I was only talking about this toy model, I just wanted to tell you that this is not just an academic exercise that happens in such a simple model, but you can also, in fact, in general relativistic systems, you have these issues when you have the closed Friedmann universe with a massive scalar field. Solutions, they behave in a very complicated fashion. In the region of maximum expansion, you have a chaotic scattering. There's a defocusing of trajectories in the region of maximal expansion. Turns out the solution space actually has a fractal structure. So again, you don't have a reduced phase space. This has not been shown rigorously, but only numerically. So in contrast to the example that we had before, okay, you can show that you don't, or argue that there's no good clocks in such a case. And if you actually want to do a relational dynamics in the quantum theory, it turns out that you generically have a problem with semi-classicality for even relatively benign trajectories. You won't be able to actually trace them out with semi-classical states. They usually blow up. Yeah, and it turns out you can argue that so relational dynamics generically breaks down in a certain sense here. So let me just conclude. So yeah, so the point here is that chaos actually destroys integrability and the existence of smooth Dirac observables. This is an indication that there are actually probably for full GR in the full solution, so not only restricting to for instance, dusty parametrization and so on, that there are actually no smooth Dirac observables. Then, but that's not necessarily terrible for the classical case because you have generalized discontinuous observables. But this is a serious problem for standard constraint quantization. So as I've indicated with these toy models, the quantum theories that you get, despite the fact that you can actually quantize, they have some issues. So what do we do? One might ask the question whether it's really meaningful to quantize general relativity in the first place, but in fact, we couldn't still try to do it. In fact, in this toy model that we had, so this is not relevant for relativity, but for this toy model, you might want to try, for instance, instead of fixing the energy to exactly one value, that you actually open up to an interval, and then you look for, rather than having constraints, something like a pseudo-constraint. And in analogy to what is done in statistical physics, where you don't really look at only at the number of states at a fixed value of the energy, but in a very small interval. And then you might actually get many, many more solutions that possibly make the situation a bit better, despite the fact that you will always have finite dimensional Hilbert spaces. Then the good news for shape dynamics is that you don't have a Hamiltonian constraint, so this issue doesn't really arise. So that's probably as much. Hojaima Lifshitz.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
So, if you take shape dynamics at face value and disregard its connection to general relativity, then in this sense, shape dynamics is better behaved. It doesn't have this issue. You don't have to find these Dirac observables with respect to Hamiltonian. One might wonder whether if you consider, again, general relativity, if you only want to quantize an integral sector of general relativity, that would be cheating because that's only would be, in general, a very small subsector of the theory, and you would be disregarding the interesting stuff. Or the final resort is to wait for Bianca to save the world by discretizing it and saving quantum gravity. In fact, there's some. The evidence is that this discrete topology quantization actually might get you around these problems, which is a remarkable result. Thank you.
So can I see this as like in the Bohr atom, where you have these wave numbers that are multiple, the orbits are multiples of the wave numbers. Would this be a similar thing that you select out these states in this compactification?
In the Bohr compactification, you mean?
Yeah. Sorry?
The Bohr-Sommerfeld rule. Yeah, but in fact, for instance, the Bohr-Sommerfeld rule is only applicable to integrable systems themselves. So for non-integrable systems, that rule doesn't work.
I have a second question.
So, yeah.
Okay, go, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, the Bohr-Sommerfeld rule is, so in integrable systems, you actually, as I mentioned in the very beginning, so in integrable systems, the kind of surface on which trajectories lie, they usually have they have a topology of a torus times something else. Usually people consider compactified cases when it lies on a torus. In Bohr-Sommerfeld, quantization is basically for degrees of freedom that count windings around the torus, where on the compact directions you get discrete quantum numbers. So that's Bohr-Sommerfeld quantization. But if you don't have if you have a non-integrable system, then actually these tori get destroyed in chaos, and then this doesn't apply anymore.
So would this still work? Would this Bianca quantization still work if you have an infinite dimensional base space?
Yeah. So I mean, okay, in the field theory context,
because it seems to be very reliant.
So I don't know. Probably should ask the savior herself.
No,
so
the main point is you have discontinuous observers, quality which can.
In fact, loop quantum gravity is polymer quantization.
So there is reason to believe that it still works in this way. Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. So, it still remains to be shown, of course, that
it
can be solved.
But the problem is, of course, that it's hard to solve the entire system in general, or whatever to enforce it.
Sure, but there's nothing in principle that breaks down for infinite dimension.
No, not
in that. In fact, if you're doing a quantum field on a fixed background, you can do it. But that's not GR. That's an example of infinite dimension.
But you're talking about the free field theory.
I'm talking about
because that's an integrable system.
You can do there's a fixed background, so it's not.
No, but it's a more complexification, but motivated from the FUG. It's what is used in the. And it's even more used in the movie at the present.
I actually was a continuation of this. Basically, yes, you were doing just particles, not fields. But if you have a scalar field, say on a torus, the particles would be a tree-level thing, right? So then, is quantizing a scalar field on a torus effectively possible?
No, probably not.
If it's this complicated, then.
No, probably not. So I mean, a scalar field. I mean, you mean so you would have to have a constraint, so parameterized field theory. So are you talking about that, or so, I mean, just standard field theory? I mean, there's no Hamiltonian constraint that you have to quantize, so there shouldn't be any issue.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess. But,
so I mean, the issue is that this problem arises if you have a Hamiltonian constraint.
Right, but it arose just for particles moving in a torus because you have this dense trajectory, right?
Yeah.
But that happens at tree level all just to see a field. Mm-hmm. As like, you know, tree level excitations are just particles moving in a torus.
Yeah.
Which is a problem. So would the field be more complicated?
So but again, I mean but are you talking about an unconstrained field theory, or
was the system that you had, was that constrained?
Yeah. If it is a non-integrable system, then you might have the same issue. Yeah. But then the question comes whether you do it, if you quantize it in a different way, in this polymerized field theory way, maybe you get around it. So.
In your case, if you speak of Feynman diagrams, it's all metadata. So it's metadata for lots of dynamics.
So if you have like perturbative, I mean, it just seems like a field would just get a lot more complicated very quickly for the same.
Yeah, but you wouldn't see the copy dynamics.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you.
Right, but the first level perturbation, right, the tree level is already particles that have density factor.
No, which would all be, I mean, these again would all come with this decay, so they will all be this people.
Right.
This people might have, which would all be
right.
Periodic orbits.
Yeah, so.
So I think it's a problem of imposing the constraint.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, but.
So you mentioned at the end that shape dynamics and Bravo Lipschitz escape this issue. The reason they escape is that there's a preferred notion of time in both of them.
Yeah.
So why is it that some preferred notions of time are cheating and others are not?
Why am I saying that it's cheating?
Yeah. I mean, so if you take TR with pressureless dust with standard model matter and make the dust time gauge, everything is fine. And it's completely general.
No, it's not completely general because it is an integrable system. So it is a completely general in the sense that you have full GR, but with a dust field in it. And I mean, that's not the generic
but it's
case.
It's full general theory.
Yeah, yeah, sure. But you
that
make
theory is sort of telling you here's a preferred time. It's almost like a parameterized problem.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not arguing that in this case you have a problem. In that case, you don't have a problem.
No, I'm just saying,
but,
why is it cheating?
Am I saying it's cheating?
You
I'm just saying. No, what I'm saying is, okay.
We don't have
cheating
dust
was on a different place, wasn't it?
Sorry, you mean, sorry, I know what you mean.
So that
I'm, okay.
Cheating.
No, I mean, okay, no, I know what you mean.
Yes.
No, I mean, okay, now I get what you mean. Cheating in the sense that this is the full picture of quantum gravity that I would call cheating because this isn't, I mean, that's not the full solution space of general relativity that you're taking, not even the full solution space of canonical general relativity.
It's a full solution space, general relativity plus dust plus any kind.
Yeah, but I mean, dust is
so
not the most general matter or content that we can have.
You
ignore
the sector where dust is zero.
Yeah.
Sorry?
You ignore the sector where the.
We don't see
dust.
I mean, if you just want to do pure GR, we don't live in that world.
Yeah, we agree, but.
So that's cheating.
I mean, I have to say, I don't find gas and dust in the, for quantum gravity at very small scale, it's too appealing.
I think I understand that. But it's
so, I mean, I just call it.
We have more peculiar.
So I just call it cheating in the sense that you're not actually quantizing the full theory. You're quantizing a special case of it.
But I agree that
no,
would,
but
Philip would add on this list all stuff with preferred blocks.
Sorry?
On this list, he could add all things with a preferred block. Mm-hmm. On this list, he had on the
yeah, so I mean, I think there is a way in which Bravo Lipschitz can be formulated where it looks like a time gauge.
Yeah, yeah.
You simply extend the phase space and you say, here's a time gauge, and then Bravo Lipschitz pops out. And then that would be cheating because there's a bigger theory at the top. So, I mean, it's really, I know what you're saying.
No, I mean, I understand that you feel.
No, I understand what you're saying. Actually.
Yeah. But it depends, of course, on your perspective. So in shape dynamics, I would just say, gets around it if you really look at it as at face value and you disregard its connection to GR.
I have a question about, so we know that, for example, in loop quantum cosmology, they have this, and also in polymer quantization applied to special systems, they have this, there's a well-defined limit in which you recover the Schrodinger quantization. Mm-hmm. So what would happen here?
So, sorry, but that's an LQC with massless scalar fields.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, but the massless scalar field.
It also happens in some toy systems where you have, you take any Hamiltonian system, say the Coulomb problem, polymer quantize it, there's a well-defined sense in which the in which you recover the Schrodinger results. So something's going to go wrong here.
So are you talking about the discrete quantization here? Or?
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
so you start with the polymer and then you ask, okay, is there a way in which I can go to the Schrodinger limit? And so in all the other cases, it seems to work. So something's going to happen.
Yeah, so I mean, it works in the other cases because in fact there it is a much, much simpler system. I mean, free or massless scalar field is the simplest system you can consider.
No,
but I mean, the point there is that, I mean, the scalar field is actually, I mean, it's continuous.
Yeah.
And then you can easily deparametrize it and there's no problem. But so we don't have anything like this here. So everything is discrete in that discrete quantization. But yeah, what you would have to do is probably, so the Schrodinger quantization, I guess, it comes out in a more like a semi-classical picture, right?
So yes, it does. Yeah. So here, the question would be, what's a semi-classical?
Yes, picture? Exactly. So I mean, that is
what's breaking down.
Yeah, I mean, so this is what remains to be done. I mean, there's evidence that the Hilbert space, the physical Hilbert space, seems big enough that you would be able to build something that that might resemble a semi-classical state. The only thing is that it's not very easy to do because you're, the Hilbert space is very big if you have an irrational step in the translation. And then you're basically building up your, from states like this, but you will have infinitely many L's that you will have to sum over in both directions to get anything interesting. And so you might wonder how you can reproduce something like this on a computer, whether you can integrate up to some step size and then maybe see something semi-classical coming out, but it actually turns out, so I tried a couple of times, it seems that all the step sizes that were numerically feasible in a finite amount of time, they don't really give you anything nice yet, so it might actually really require much, much more computational power to do that. Well, no, so I mean here, so the distinction is that in the standard Dirac quantization, there's really, what I showed you there before, it really doesn't get any better than that in principle, impossible. But here, the thing is that it's a technical challenge, it's not a problem in principle.
So
that's a qualitative difference.
If I can add, the problem is that there generically, the wave functions have to be constant along the orbits. The orbits are ergodic and fill the torus. So if you want to see something interesting, usually you just see a block of gray stuff. But that's what it should be. That's also the classical limit, just that the classical limit in itself is so interesting.
All semi-classical wave functions will go and fill up the torus.
Still, the question we have is whether
one
can peak exactly on the periodic orbit.
The issue of the semi-classical limit in chaotic systems in general is a very delicate problem. So I mean the semi-classical limit of chaotic systems in general is a very non-trivial thing that is very different from integrable systems. And what happens often is in fact that that semi-classical states in a chaotic system that they somehow peak on the periodic unstable orbits and otherwise are kind of smoothly spread out, which is something that intuitively you wouldn't expect maybe. But yeah, so I mean that issue is generic not only to this system. Yeah.
Sorry, this is obviously too interesting and we should thank Philip again.